It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins. Game over! Franco wins it!
He got it! He pulled it right out of the bushes!
Swing and a miss! He got him! And Aaron Nola leads two.
Swing and a miss! Struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 283. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation.
The number every week just gets me. It's like, wow, that's a lot.
283 of these things. I mean, we've been doing this since 2015 when literally no one else had a Phillies podcast. No one else had a Phillies podcast, and we are still going strong here with episode number 283. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. Follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Joining me, as she does every Sunday night, is the great Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports. You can follow Liz on Twitter at Liz Rocher. I missed you guys last week, but you and Justin Clue held down the fort brilliantly last weekend. Liz, how you doing? How was the weekend? I know you went to the game on Saturday night, which we'll get your thoughts on that in just a second, but just overall, how you feeling?
Feeling good. Thank you for the kind words about the podcast last week. We had a good time.
Did you have a better time without me than you do with me?
Justin and I do a separate podcast every week with you, so it was just sort of like doing that again.
And yes, like, yeah, literally continued success.
Right before that, we recorded our Patreon episode on our latest trashy baseball romance novel. This time it was three stories crammed into one. So we were, by the time we got to Hittin' Season, By the time we got to Hittin' Season, we were really loose and ready to go.
Yeah, either that or sick of each other. I mean, one of those two things was bound to be.
It's a fine line sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, hey, by the way, the Patreon. If you like the bonus content, if this isn't enough Phillies content for you here on the Good Fight podcast feed, then head on over to our Patreon. It's at patreon.com/hittinseason. And as Liz just mentioned, there are some bonus editions of Continued Success in which Justin and Liz talk about trashy baseball-themed romance novels and baseball movies. I do a video series where I talk about some old baseball players by opening up some old baseball cards. It's kind of stealing a page from Mike Oz's playbook. I know that. I've told Mike them. It's all good. But we also have some other written content. I wrote something this week with I'm going to do a monthly power rankings around baseball. So we got a lot there. So make sure to check out our Patreon. It's again patreon.com/hittinseason. And of course, for you subscribers to the Good Fight podcast feed, make sure to leave a 5-star rating and a review if and when you get a chance. That would help us out a lot. And on this episode of the podcast, we are going to do a Patreon mailbag edition. So what we do is we offer our Patreon listeners a special reward by allowing them exclusive podcast questions once in a while. And we decided to make this a Patreon-only mailbag edition. So again, if you want to be a part of that for the next go-around, make sure you sign up on the $5 a month tier to the Hittin' Season Patreon, and you will get your podcast questions up exclusively on the pod. But first, before we get into that, Liz, let's talk a little bit about this Phillies National Series. Phillies obviously take two out of three against a depleted Nationals squad that did not have Anthony Rendon, Juan Soto, Ryan Zimmerman, Trey Turner. It was like playing the Nationals in a B squad spring training game this week. And I can't help but also be thankful that we missed Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg and got Jeremy Hellickson the guy who pitched today. Well, Patrick Corbin was Saturday, and who pitched today? Oh, Anibal Sanchez. The name completely flew out of my head because he's inconsequential. But that's where things stand after the Phillies' 7-1 win on Sunday. They have evened the series with the Nationals up this season at 4-4, and the Phillies are now 19-14 on the season. The Nationals really struggling at 14-19. The Phillies in first place, 1.5 games up on Atlanta, 3.5 up on the Mets, and 5 up on the Nationals. The Phillies currently playing at about a 93-win pace here, Liz. Oh, does it feel like a 93-win pace? It doesn't, does it?
I mean, I think it doesn't in part because so the games have been such struggles. Like, this is one of those seasons where we're going to remember a lot of the games because they were either so good or so bad.
Right,
like,
right.
This is probably not the first time I've said this. There is no in between with this team. This team is either real good or real bad. There isn't a lot of mediocrity. And you know what? I'll take it. I'll take a team like this.
Sure, especially when they're five games over 500 and in first place. And last year's team was defined by winning a bunch of one-run games early in the season, and that's why a lot of fans weren't really on board, because it seemed a little fluky. The run differential wasn't exactly where you would expect it to be for a team with their record. This season, they've only played 6 one-run games, and they're 3-3 in those one-run games. This year's team really has been defined by blowouts. Sunday was the 10th time in 33 games. So we're talking about just less than a third of their games this year have been decided by 5 or more runs. Which is crazy. There's been just a lot of non-competitive games, Sundays being one of them. The Phillies are 7-3 in those 10 games, which is, again, I'd rather be on the winning side of those blowouts than on the losing side. But they're not exactly, like you said, Liz, a lot of these games, you know, are, they've either been blowout losses, or the losses that the Phillies have had this year are like Saturday nights, soul crushers. Ugh. I mean, this team doesn't lose baseball games 5-2. You know, they trail, and then they score 5 in the 7th inning to take a 3-run lead. And then their best relief pitcher, who hadn't given up a run all season, gives up a 3-run homer and a solo home run to lose in crushing fashion. But that's the only game of the series that they lost. I mean, that's the thing. We especially to the Nationals. The Phillies seem to find new and interesting ways to lose to the Nationals virtually every series they play, but at least this weekend, Liz, against a weekend Nationals team, the Phillies ended up winning 2 out of 3, and, you know, hey, I'll take it. Just like you said, I'll take it.
Yes, may our competitors always be weakened.
That's right.
A win is a win. Doesn't look any different, right? Unless when it's against, you know, Miami or, you know, the fearsome Tampa Bay Rays. A win is always a win, so...
No doubt.
Witnessing this soul-crushing defeat was something else.
Yeah, no, and yeah, Liz was at the game on Saturday night because you wanted to go see the Jimmy Rollins retirement ceremony, which was just great. I watched it. I watched it online, but it seems like the Phillies always do that very, very well. They really know how to honor their alumni, and they put on a great show. Dan Baker, obviously, as a master of ceremonies, can't do any better than that unless you got Harry the K there. And obviously, Dan Baker has had to take over that role for Harry Callis in the last few years. But so what was that like? I mean, you got the replica ring, and aside from the game being a crushing disappointment, seeing Jimmy Rollins, listening to his entertaining speech, and being there with a full house to welcome Jimmy Rollins back must have been really cool.
It was great. You know, you hear Dan Baker's voice booming through, like, actually through your eardrums instead of through a television speaker. It's like, it gets your heart going. Makes you feel the flutters. It was great. Everyone, you know, seeing everybody be introduced. Like, Jimmy's got 3 daughters, which is adorable. My father is the father of 3 daughters. Really, you know.
That's cool.
He loves these 2008, you know, these Phillies from this recent run. He loves them so much. And it's just like every time he learns something like that, he's like, well, this just makes it even better. How is that possible?
Yeah.
But he was great. Jimmy was wonderful. He was entertaining and fun. He went out on the field. He was announced as shortstop. It was really, it was funny and cute. And he was, you know, he talked about how he, you know, he had been resistant to this idea for a while. Because I remember the last time he talked about it was, you know, he said something like, I want them to sign me. I want to actually play a game before I'll actually
retire. Yeah, we talked about
that
last year, I think, didn't we? Like, trying to figure out a way for the Phillies to get him to play a game.
Yeah, I mean, last year would have been, you know, actually the 2017 would have been the time,
really. Yeah, 2017.
Really. That would have been the time. But... You know, he talked about how he had been resistant to it, but the Phillies, you know, PR office, you know, spent time convincing him, you know, to sort of let them send him off right. So it was excellent. It was worth it. That unbelievably putrid ending was worth it.
Yeah.
We were not in our seats for the 5-run outburst. We decided to go up and go to the store. And I bought an embarrassing amount of stuff because I don't know when I'm going to be back. I'm going to be back at the end of May for the Billy Joel concert, which is awesome. I'm excited about that. But yeah. I don't know when I'm going to be back. So I bought a bunch of stuff, and, you know, they started, you know, the outburst started, and we didn't want to leave. We were afraid if we left, it would stop. And so once the inning ended, we left the store and sat in our seats, and then we watched them lose.
Well, that was your mistake. Going back to your seats. That was the error that you guys made.
I know. We talked about getting back up.
Everybody.
Then by then it was too late. I'm sorry.
Philadelphia, you know who to blame. It was Liz Rocher and her father. It's just not... It's
no. Philadelphia can blame the fans in the stadium.
Yeah, let's get into that. And I want to talk about Sunday's game and Zach Eflin a little bit here in just a minute. But since we're on this... I saw, you know, you tweeted out and it got seen by a lot of people about the fact that apparently the whole reason that the Phillies lost this game was because the wave was going on in Citizens Bank Park. And there are some people who are pro-wave and there are many people who are anti-wave. And you and I are both anti-wave people. It bothers me, too. I find it annoying. But what was it about the wave on Saturday that galled you in particular?
So I will say a wave every now and when you're up far is fine. A 3-run lead, which is what they had, was not enough. That was not enough for the wave. That's the sign of not only a disengaged crowd, but an overconfident crowd. How many
or maybe an inexperienced crowd, you know, like it's a lot of probably people haven't been there in years just for the Jimmy Rollins thing.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely true. And I should take that into account. And I didn't. And I will say, you know, that's something to recognize. And normally the wave bothers me, but I don't have such a violent reaction to it. The issue with the wave last night, and I'm glad I get a chance to actually explain this, is that one wave is annoying, but fine. Understandable. People get restless. They're going to do that. It happens. A group of people started a counter wave going the other way. It became like an incredibly complicated thing that everyone was paying very close attention to. At least, you know, a good probably 2/3 of the stadium. You know, the people on the very, very top don't necessarily have the opportunity to participate in this stuff. But the 2/3 of the stadium was involved in this. And it was really strange. It was eliciting very odd noises from the crowd. Like, not a normal cheer. It was bizarre. Like I was just wondering why is everyone paying so close attention to this? Because Pat Neshek was starting to struggle and no one was noticing. He was stepping off a lot. Pitchers, every baseball player is supposed to tune this out. And if Pat Neshek can't, then that is a problem. But I also wouldn't blame him if this bizarre weirdness caught him off guard. Because what the hell? It was really strange. It's just like everyone decided there wasn't a baseball game happening for like 10 minutes. Because once they started giving up runs, everyone shut up super quick.
Yeah, because, you know, it's what you're there for, is to watch the baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's unfortunate that, you know, because I do think, you know, fans are aware of when things are going on in the stands. I mean, it's a totally different scenario, but the Osama bin Laden game, you know, the players on the field knew that something was going on in the stadium by the fans and how they were reacting. And so maybe that did distract Pat Neshek. He would never admit it, and the Phillies would never admit it, that, you know, the fans had anything to do with Neshek losing focus or maybe he didn't lose.
And
maybe it had nothing to do with it.
And I'll fully admit, it's an assumption. It is a wild assumption that I have nothing to prove other than my feeling and watching the game there live. I'm fully prepared to admit I'm wrong, but that is what it seemed like. I'm sitting there with my dad, who is just like, please don't let this happen. It's been such a nice evening with my daughter and her fiance. And, you know, my fiance Sean and I were sitting there just watching this game, trying to tune out the wave. I'm trying not to start yelling at the people around me. And once they start giving up runs, I do start yelling.
Sure. I can imagine that.
I'm not kidding. Yeah, I started yelling, this is all your fault. I'm not shocked that no one answered.
Well, I mean, and the Phillies ended up losing the game on Saturday night, the only game of the series that they would lose. And it was a crusher. There's no doubt about it.
That, that bullpen makes me want.
Well,
sometimes.
Let's talk. let's talk about this a little bit, because the bullpen on Saturday night, I mean, obviously Juan Nicasio, I tweeted out, I think Juan Nicasio just needs to go. He's got nothing. He's terrible. He can't throw strikes. When he does throw strikes, the ball goes a long way on him. I know on Saturday night it was like bunt, infield, single, and then he threw a ball into right field, which you know, it's just, you know, you've got a bad relief pitcher when they're trying to give you an out and he's throwing the ball into the outfield. Just Juan Nicasio hasn't been effective all season. They've got other arms that they can use instead of Nicasio, and it's hard to get too upset at Adam Morgan for giving up a 3-run homer and then the solo homer to Robles, because he's been so damn good this year.
He has.
I guess
he picked a bad night to have a bad night. You know, he's not gonna. I'm not angry that those were crushing to see happen in real time, especially since the Phillies didn't hit a single home run.
Yeah.
But I don't, I can't feel, you know, I'm not that upset at him. Pat Neshek has been a little bit of hot garbage this season, and last night was not fun. Regardless of why it happened, it was bad.
Yeah, you don't know what you're going to get from him on a nightly basis so far this year. He's really been kind of hit or miss, and really that's what you've been seeing from all of the relief pitchers. There hasn't been really any relief pitcher, aside from Adam Morgan, until Saturday night, where you could say, man, I really feel like this guy's going to lock things down. But they've all shown good stuff. They've all had good outings. They've all had appearances this year where they've looked really good, and they've strung three or four good appearances together, but then it goes away for an appearance or two, and they really struggle. And that's the thing about the Phillies bullpen is it actually is, statistically speaking, the best of the division so far. That's how bad the Braves, the Mets, and the Nationals bullpens are. The Mets bullpen is infinitely worse than the Phillies bullpen,
on fire,
which is
currently.
Just, oh my gosh, it's that's saying something. Only the Orioles have a worse bullpen ERA than the Nationals so far this year. And so, I mean, obviously, a lot of people yelling about Craig Kimbrell. He's still out there. I don't think at this point they need Craig Kimbrell. I think what they need to do is bring up some of the guys. Well, I mean, I just don't know what he's going to give you at this point in the season.
And that's a foolish thing for us to think, because we know that he could be good. And I think it would be worth it to give him a chance. And so, what is the worst that could happen? Could he be worse for any of any bullpen in the NL East? Could he actually make it worse? I don't think so.
I wonder what the hell is he still asking for if he's still unsigned? You know what I mean?
I'm not entirely convinced that anyone's made him an offer recently. Someone has to get off their ass and actually pick up the phone and wake up, you know, Scott Boras from whatever, you know, beach chair he's fallen asleep on. The image in my head is
not. What if he's still asking for a 5-year deal? What if he's asking for a 5-year deal still?
He can't. You know? Like, if he's still asking for a 5-year deal at this point, and Scott Boras isn't willing to talk to anybody unless it's that he needs to fire Scott Boras, because that's
dumb. That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
but you know, but then he's being dumb, and everyone is right to not talk to him. But I also don't think that's. I feel like at this point that's not happening.
See, I wonder if it doesn't make more sense right now for the Phillies to use some of the arms that they already have at their disposal. They sent down Eniel De Los Santos to AAA after the game on Sunday because they want to get him regular work. He's a starting pitcher, and he pitched well in the game on Sunday, pitched two shutout innings to finish things off. And it looks like they're going to bring up Edgar Garcia to replace him, who has been lights out in AAA this year. 16 and a third innings for him, 6 hits given up, just 3 runs so far this year, 23 strikeouts and 6 walks in 16 and a third innings. He's looked really good in AAA. They are really high on his arm. And there's conversation about Nick Pivetta possibly moving him to the bullpen and seeing his fastball matched up with a curveball late in games. That could absolutely be disgusting. I think you have a couple of options there that you could improve the bullpen. And the Phillies still have to hope. I know David Robertson doesn't seem like he's going to be back anytime soon. Tommy Hunter doesn't seem like he's going to be back anytime soon. The Phillies are paying $19 million this year to both of those guys, and they still have not been they have not been of any use to the team here in 2019. But I would rather just kind of see what Nick Pivetta can give you in the bullpen and get some use out of him. He's getting wasted in AAA right now. Just put him in the bullpen and let's see what he can do there. He could be a dynamic bullpen arm with throwing 98, 99 miles an hour with that crazy killer curveball of his. Let him focus on just 2 pitches at one and two innings at a time.
I guess it depends on what they think his future is. You know, do they think, I guess it's a good situation for the Phillies to be in, for them to actually have like a bunch of viable starters, and you know, so many that one of them has to go, you know, be in AAA for a while. But if he has a long-term history, a long-term future as a starter, if they really want to keep him that way, I don't know about moving him to the bullpen. I mean, if they can get use out of him, I'm for it, but I'll admit I don't really know the answer to that.
I don't know that putting him in the bullpen for a portion of 2019, if they do it this year, it does probably mean that they can't use him as a starter this year. But I will say this, I think that the Phillies, if there is a problem with Jared Eichhoff at some point this year, or if Velasquez falls off the face of the earth, or if Zach Eflin loses it at some point here over the next little while, and they need another starting pitcher, I think it's easier to go out and get a reliable starting pitcher at the trade deadline than rolling the dice on a relief pitcher. A reliever probably won't cost you as much at the trade deadline, but it's kind of more of a crapshoot than going out and getting a starting pitcher. So, you know, I think that they are planning on being able to supplement the rotation that way if they need to. But I hear what you're saying. If you move Pivetta out of the starting rotation, can you make him a starter again in 2020, 2021 down the road? I think you can.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
You wouldn't be able to do it for this mm-hmm. year.
And I feel, and I'll, honestly, I think that's dangerous. Like the Phillies have issues with depth at a couple of positions right now. I would rather pitcher not be one of them. I would rather starting pitcher yeah. not be one of them. And I feel like thus far they've gotten unlucky with injuries to position players, but very lucky with how, not just, you know, injuries to starting pitchers, but how everyone has performed. Even, you know, Aaron Nola has been bringing it back. Jake Arrieta is a different story entirely, but you know, for the most part, they've gotten really lucky and it's been great. I don't want to stare the other end of that in the face.
No, and that makes, I totally get that. But, you know, I will say one other thing to kind of pump up my case here for Nick Pivetta in the bullpen. And that's the AAA rotation has, I think, been going with a 6-man rotation this year.
Well,
And so, you know, I think there's a little bit of depth there where you could move him into the starting rotation and you wouldn't necessarily lose that depth. Although, you know, we came into the season talking about, you know, the Phillies, Nick Pivetta breakout season. And it's just, that hasn't come to pass so far, but, you know, the other good thing here, I saw this stat was tweeted out earlier today. The Phillies starting rotation has a 3.02 ERA over the last 17 games.
Yeah.
It doesn't quite feel that way, but the starting rotation has been very solid over the last 17 games with a 3.02 ERA. So, I mean, obviously the area where they need the most help right now is the bullpen. I don't want to give up on Nick Pivetta there, but I think I'd rather take a shot with Pivetta and Edgar Garcia and maybe another triple A arm than go out and sign Craig Kimbrell right now. But if the Phillies got Craig Kimbrell, I wouldn't be upset about
yeah.
it. I mean,
I agree with you. I think that they should be able to make it work for now. Like, they're not, I mean, maybe they will call it Pivetta, but I think, you know, someone else needs to have a bad outing. Like, they've shown that they've had a long leash-ish with their bullpen mm-hmm. guys. You know, I'm still harboring memories of, you know, last year it was one or two too many outings for Hector Neris. The year before that, it was two dudes whose names who've now completely flown out of my head, but I can picture them. whoever it was those 2 years, the former closer and Genmar Gomez and
Genmar
and someone else. God, I can't believe I can't remember. But like they both had like, let's what more can they give us? One more outing? Let's try them for one more outing before they ruin one more game. Like they've had a long leash with these guys. So I think we've got maybe another couple of games of bad outings before we hear more about Pivetta, maybe.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what they do. I don't think the bullpen is as drastic a problem
yeah.
as some fans are making it out to be. I think the reaction
feels like it.
Online, it feels like it, because those late blown leads are devastating. There's no doubt about it. And the Phillies don't have a closer. They don't seem to have any roles. I was very surprised when Sir Anthony Dominguez came into the game in the sixth inning the other day for when they took Jared Eichhoff out of the game. I was surprised he went that early. We're going to talk a little bit more about Sir Anthony Dominguez coming up here in just a few minutes, but there are no real established roles in the bullpen at the moment. I think that makes people a little uneasy too. Makes me a little uneasy. It's definitely some work to do there with the bullpen. Before we get to our first break, Liz, let's talk about Zach Eflin. He had another terrific outing on Sunday. He's starting to make a believer out of me. 7 innings pitched, 4 hits, 5 strikeouts, 2 walks, 1 earned run. Now has a 3.00 ERA this season in 7 starts over 42 innings. He is 6th in the National League in strikeout to walk ratio with his 5 strikeouts and 1 walk today. And here is where Zach Eflin is really dominating. Getting that first pitch strike, Liz. 21 first pitch strikes today. He's now 2nd in Major League Baseball in that category this year at 71.8% first pitch strike rate. That's behind only Max Scherzer. This is a dude who is pumping in first quality first pitch strikes. And when you get ahead 0-1, the pitcher has a huge advantage over 1-0. This is one of the areas where Aaron Nola really stumbled early in the season. His first pitch strike percentage was way down. Last year, he had one of the highest first pitch strike percentages in all of baseball. That's the key to pitching well, is to make quality pitches with your first pitch. So, I mean, if you're throwing the ball right down the middle of the plate first pitch every time, you're going to get whacked into next week. But if you can make quality pitches and get ahead 0-1, you're going to have a lot of success. And Zach Eflin is doing that this year. And that really, I believe, is the key to his success so far.
I can't argue with you. I mean, I am a longtime supporter of Zach Eflin.
Yes, you are.
I am a longtime supporter of Zach Eflin. And I hoped and dreamed that this would happen to him because
I have been too, Liz. I've been with him the whole time.
I mean, I love him, and I couldn't be more thrilled. I'm so happy because I just remember when he first came up, seeing how good he was for that stretch of games. Like 2 complete games or 3, something like that. He was just surprising, and he just bloomed at just slightly the wrong time to make a really hugely meaningful impact on the team. And then he was gone for, you know, so long with injury. Like, I'm so thrilled he sort of made it through and that he's pitching well and that he's, you know, really making a difference, because he was a question mark.
Yeah, no, that's very true. That's very true. And, you know, listen, with Eflin, He has really saved the rotation.
So much.
Let me ask you this. He has saved the rotation, but let me ask, who has been the most pleasant surprise this year? Has it been Jake Arrieta, Jared Eichhoff, or Zach Eflin?
I love Zach Eflin, but it would have to be Jared Eichhoff, who many of us thought might retire. we were questions about whether he would ever pitch again. And you know, he's back to the Jared Eichhoff that we remember. Like, him and Eflin were just these bright, shiny gems of what the future Phillies could be. And, you know, Aaron Nola was still great, but they were just kind of not there. And to have a rotation of, you know, three guys that came through the Phillies minors, maybe not all completely, but to a certain extent, like, that's what every team dreams of. To have homegrown talent filling up your rotation.
Yeah, and that was I didn't think we were going to get anything more from Jared Eichhoff. I mean, I really just, and I love Jared Eichhoff too. I called him the human metronome back when he was in 2015 and 16, when he was at the height of his power. And he's just such a throwback. He's not a high velocity guy. But he gets a ton of swings and misses with his pinpoint placement and his curveball. And you know, I think it really is great. He has been, I think, the biggest surprise. I think the most impactful surprise is probably Jake Arrieta and how he has pitched this year. His mechanics have been locked in and he's been very effective. He's looked like a number 2 starter this year for the Phillies, and that has been absolutely enormous, and I'm a little bit more confident in Jake Arrieta's staying power than I am Jared Eichhoff's. I'm just a little bit worried that people are going to figure out Jared Eichhoff because he doesn't throw hard, and I'm a little bit concerned about the injury coming back. But so far, so good with Eichhoff and the starting rotation, as I mentioned a minute ago, with that statistic over the last 17 games, 3.09 ERA. They've really been doing the job for a Phillies team with an inconsistent but sometimes great offense and a bullpen that is also inconsistent here in the early going. The Phillies are 14-7 at home this year, 15-9 against the National League East, Liz. So they have played about a third of their National League East games already. They've locked in a third of their division games. They are 15-9 against the division. They don't play the NL East again for another 6 weeks.
Ooh,
so
wow.
They've played more games in their division than any other team in baseball. And so they have made some serious hay against the division after struggling big time against division opponents last year. Also, one real quick word about Rhys Hoskins before we get to the break here. His 2 RBI today gave him 31. He's the third player in the National League to cross 30 RBIs this season, joining Cody Bellinger and Christian Yelich, probably the top two candidates for MVP so far. Rhys Hoskins has been consistent. That's been a big difference for him this year, hitting 291 with a 424 on base and a 632 slugging percentage. His at-bats are a masterclass in working pitchers and getting pitches to hit 10 home runs and a weighted runs created plus of 177, Liz. I mean, he's putting it together so far here. We have not seen the crazy runs of super-duper hotness and then super-duper coldness. He has been pretty steady so far, and that was one of the things we wanted to see, if he would improve upon this year.
Yeah, I couldn't be more pleased with what we've seen. I've seen him hit some home runs lately that he's just golfed off the bottom of the zone.
Yeah,
and that's just you have to do that. You have to hit them from everywhere, and figuring out how to be a more consistent hitter is so important. And I'm sure part of it is that he's surrounded by a lot more than he used to be. You know, when you looked at the Phillies lineup, there were a lot of holes, you know, that made it easy for Rhys Hoskins to really have to press. This year, there's just, it all feels more relaxed. Sometimes the offense is too relaxed. But Hoskins himself has been, you know, very steady. And that's they need that. They need hitters who can do that. They haven't had guys like that.
Yep, no doubt about it. And Jeet Segura being back, not being one of those guys. It's a good mix to have some guys who are super patient and some guys who are aggressive. And the Phillies have a couple of those guys mixed in. But Rhys Hoskins, so if you're going to be a guy who sees a lot of pitches, you got to be able to hit with two strikes. You got to be able to foul balls off. And then you got to be able to make pitchers pay when they have to come back over the middle of the plate. And that's what he has done so far here this season. He's, I think, been the third most effective offensive player in the National League here so far this season. Up next, we're going to get into the Patreon mailbag and take some mailbag questions from our Patreon listeners. That'll be up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. John Stolness and Liz Rocher with you on episode number 283 here. All right, Liz, let's crack open the Patreon mailbag here. Again, these are mailbag questions submitted by Hittin' Season Patreon listeners. You got to be on the $5 a month tier to be a part of the mailbag. And so if you want to do that, go to patreon.com/hittin'season and sign on up. And the next time we do a mailbag, we'll make sure and you submit a mailbag question, it will be sure to get answered. All right, let's take Tom Snow's question. He asks, will Cesar Hernandez have a job when Scott Kingery comes back? Any chance that Cesar gets DFA'd? Cesar Hernandez, and I'm not a Cesar guy, but he is hitting .289 this year with a .346 on base and a .421 slugging percentage. It's a weighted runs created plus of 104. He had his second double of the day on Sunday. He had two doubles on Sunday, 8 on the season now. He leads the team in doubles over the last 3 weeks. His OPS is up to .767, which isn't awesome, but it's also not crappy. Cesar Hernandez, Scott Kingery, where are you on these two guys. When Scott Kingery comes back, given how hot he was hitting, would you give him the everyday second base job over Cesar Hernandez, or does Cesar deserve to keep it for a little while, despite some of the base running and fielding blunders we've seen from him this year?
I think they'll give, given how hot he was, that doesn't mean he's going to continue, but I think they'll give him the chance to prove he should have some time. He should have consistent
time. You're talking about Kingery.
Time. Yes, Kingery. That's okay. Who I'm talking about. One of them is going to have a, you know, loudly state, this is my job. This is my.
Right. Right.
Like, Cesar's been good at the plate for the most part. For the most part. In the field, he's been. Oh. Like, maybe
yeah,
not on the whole, but there have been some heartbreakers. And, you know, maybe it's recency bias. Maybe I'm just remembering the really bad stuff. But I feel like he's been real bad in the field this year. I have not looked at numbers. Don't at me. But I would like to see Kingery get a chance. I'd like to see him get a chance. I'd like for one of them to take hold of the job and prevent Gabe Kapler from starting someone else. Whoever it is, I just want someone to do that.
Yeah, no, I want that too. And I think we're all ready for the second base situation to be resolved. But, you know, I think that you really just want production, and you want to stop seeing Cesar make these blunders. And I think Cesar has saved himself by getting hot here with the bat.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit over the last couple of weeks. I mean, because it was not looking good for him a couple weeks ago when he was in the midst of his struggles and all the mental mistakes that he was making.
Yeah, true. I don't think they'll DFA him, even if he was
no.
bad. Even, I mean, he would have to be really bad. Scott Kingery would have to be really good. And even then, I don't know if they would. Phillies, you know, Cesar's been part of the family for a long time.
Yeah, I think it's going to take a lot for them to move Cesar out unless they can find a trade partner.
That's it. He could be useful for another team. Just no other team has really needed someone like him. Someone might.
Yeah.
And you don't DFA someone like that.
Yeah, no, I agree. He's too valuable to do that. But I have been frustrated with Cesar Hernandez. I am looking forward to the Scott Kingery era beginning. And it's still fair to wonder if Scott Kingery is going to come back and hit the way he did at the start of the season here. We'll have to see. If Scott Kingery comes back and struggles like he did last year, then Cesar's hold on the job strengthens. But at the moment, no, I agree 100%. Cesar doesn't get DFA'd. As a matter of fact, I do think he holds on to the starting job when Kingery returns, although Kingery, I think, will get a couple more starts here and there. James Tillett asks, do you know what happened to Tom Eshelman? I know he's only 24, but his promising progression from 2016 to 17 has all but gone into reverse the past 2 years, and now he's getting destroyed back down in double-A ball. I will say, Liz, with Tom Eshelman, he's always been a guy who relies on pinpoint command. He's never had big swing and miss stuff, but his numbers in double-A this year are really weird. He has an 8.44 ERA, but his FIP is 2.57.
Whoa.
He has a 10.13 strikeout per nine and a 2.25 walks per nine rate. So those are crazy weird numbers. His strikeout rate is way up. His walk rate is down, which are two things you always want to see from your pitchers, which is why he has the 2.57 FIP. Yeah, that looks at strikeout rate, walk rate, and home run rate. But the 8.44 ERA is so drastically different. One of those two numbers has to give. You would have to think that ERA is going to come down at some point. That being said, Eshelman is not a real prospect. I had Tom Eshelman on the podcast. I like Tom a lot. I'm hoping that he can make it to the big leagues in some capacity, but I just don't think... I think you can succeed at the big league level with pinpoint control, but you've got to have a couple of swing and miss pitches in your arsenal, like Jared Eichhoff does with his curveball. And I don't think Eshelman has anything like that. Do you have any thoughts on Eshelman? I know neither of us have watched him all that much live ourselves, so we can just kind of look at the numbers and read the scouting reports, and that's what I've picked up.
Yeah, like that's weird. Like,
aren't those numbers crazy?
That's bizarre. Like, what happened? What happened to it's four games. What happened to allow all of this weirdness? And God, now I'm looking back at his 2018. Good God. Like,
It was a bad season last year. He had a really bad year last year.
140 innings. Like, that's not a small number. That's a lot.
No, they gave him a chance to get out of
Many, sure, many chances, yeah. And he's not looking good right now. Like, sometimes you just lose it. Sometimes it happens. Yeah. You know, sometimes seasons are flukes. It would be great to see him get it back because he obviously has the potential. You know, whenever a player does that, you know, given the right conditions, they could do it again. He just has to figure out what those conditions are and if he can replicate them. And if he can't, then, I mean, maybe I don't think Major League Baseball is for him. He has to at least pitch better to stay in minor league baseball if that's what he wants to do.
Yeah, and I mentioned one of my bold predictions before last season was that Tom Eshelman would come up and be the fifth starter and pitch meaningful innings, and whoa, boy, was that one wrong. I really did. I liked the idea. He pitched really well in spring training last year and was one of the better-looking pitchers in spring training, and maybe not making the team messed with his mind a little bit, but he's got to get the ERA down in order to get the – it's not good when you get demoted
at
24.
No, I mean –
when you're in AAA and you go down a level.
You had every reason to make that prediction when you did. He just won the Paul Owens Award. He had a great season. Him and Kingery together won the Paul Owens Award. And the following season, Kingery got a contract.
Yep.
And so there is no, like, you can't be criticized for that, for making that prediction, because he looked like he was making a huge impact. Like, he was going to come up and really be something. Like, 2018 was not what anyone expected, least of all Tom Eshelman, I'm sure. I'd love to see him figure it out. I just don't have a lot of faith that he will. So whatever happens, I wish him a lot of luck.
Me too. He's a friend of the podcast. I love Tom Eshelman. I'm hoping he can work this out, because I'd love to see him at the big league level. Steve Appleman asks, everyone knows the struggles the Phillies had last season when it came to the defense, but that trend seems to be continuing this season, even though we have players who are better defenders than the ones who were starting last year. Is there any reason you can identify that the defense still hasn't really improved drastically from last year? You look around the horn, there's a new first baseman. Rhys Hoskins is in for Carlos Santana. You have the same second baseman, and as we just were talking about a second ago with Cesar Hernandez, he's an okay defender, but he's not I wouldn't say he's above average defensively at second base. I would say Scott Kingery is an above average defensive second baseman. At least he showed that in the
and
minors.
And he looked good in a couple innings there this year.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just a natural there. That's where he should be. That's where he should be. Although he has gotten better at shortstop, and he's played decently at third on the few occasions he's been there. So I've been pleased with Kingery's ability to fill in at different spots, but he's a well above average defensive second baseman, but he hasn't played enough there. He got Gene Segura at shortstop, which, again, he has not had a great defensive start to the season, but he should be better. Michael Franco at third. You know, he is at third base. It's
everyone
looks
stop
fine.
Pretending that he's not perfectly average. Sometimes he's a little
he's
below
average,
but like, I think we're going to have a question about Franco later, so I'll get into some of this later. But you know,
okay, like, well, left field has improved dramatically with Andrew McCutchen there, and with right field and Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper hasn't looked great defensively in right field. That was a concern coming into the season based off of last year's numbers. And JT Realmuto behind the plate has been a big improvement over Jorge Alfaro. The defense is better, but still not great. What is your take on the defense?
I think it's better. I think it's been a little below average, but nothing to get, you know, crazy about. It's better than it was last season, and I have faith that it'll continue to get better. Cesar Hernandez has certainly improved. Odubel Herrera is on his way back. Though, you know, Andrew McCutchen hasn't looked bad there. You know, when he was playing there for a while, he hasn't looked bad at all. He's made a couple of good-looking plays. Franco is perfectly fine. I think everyone is fine. I think it's all an improvement over last year. I think a lot of it's just mental mistakes, and which is stuff that, you know, you have to improve on. I think mental mistakes are really unfortunate.
You know what the issue is? There's no dynamic defender out there. There's no one who plays any position on the field defensively for the Phillies who's well above average.
Yeah.
And I think that's an issue. I think that's the thing. There's no really athletic defenders out there. I mean, you've got Odubel Herrera in center field, who's fine. He gets to most balls out there, but he's not going to make the spectacular play in center field. Neither is Andrew McCutchen in left field. McCutchen's very good, and he will make a nice diving play once in a while, but he's not a spectacular defender in left. Bryce Harper, obviously, not a spectacular defender in right. Hoskins at first, Cesar at second, Segura at shortstop, Franco at third. Nobody on the field for the Phillies has a ton of great range. Nobody is making diving plays in the hole, picking up with a rocket arm and firing a strike to first base. And that's the element that's missing on defense for the Phillies. And, you know, I'll take it. When the offense is doing really well and you've got a bunch of good players and the defense is better, as long as you're not hurting the team and you're making the routine plays, I'm okay with that. But when you're looking at the defensive metrics, which again are mostly nonsense at this point with all the shifting going on, but you can just see with the eye test, you're not seeing phenomenal plays being made by the defense out there.
No, I mean, and I think maybe, you know, I've never found Cesar Hernandez to be a particularly dynamic defender. He's continued as the Phillies' second baseman because he can hit a bit. I'd like to see, you know, I've liked what I've seen from Kingery. I don't think he was overly spectacular, but I think you put in someone who has always seemed to me a lot more sure of himself when he's at second than anywhere else, and who feels a lot more sure of himself than Cesar Hernandez does. I never feel like Cesar Hernandez always completely knows what he's doing.
Yeah, it's knowing what to do with the ball. One of the things they said about Jimmy Rollins during the ceremony was he was always, I think Ryan Howard said this, he was always two or three plays ahead. You know, he always knew what he was going to do with the ball two or three plays ahead of time. And I don't think Cesar has that.
They played some highlights of Jimmy. Like, there was this video, which was wonderful. The hair. My God, the hair.
Yeah.
Oh, and I do want to mention, the Phillies made a patch with, like, Rollins tipping his hat. Like, it was gorgeous. Every player had it on their jersey last night, and they made a custom, like a big home plate
really nice.
Cover. It was really nice.
Yeah.
But they showed some play. They showed a big long highlight reel of his plays, and holy crap.
It was so good.
The crowd was just reacting every time, like reacting live in time with all of these plays that I'm just making dramatic noises because unbelievable luck to have had such a shortstop. Like, he's such a joy to watch. And there really isn't anyone like that. My hope is maybe adding Scott Kingery to the defense regularly can elevate everyone a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, you add a great player and suddenly, or you add a better defenseman and, you know, a rising tide raises all boats.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Yep. And remember that 2008 play, that double play where Rollins dives in the hole, flips it to Utley, who turns and throws to first base. We don't have a defensive alignment that's capable of making that kind of a double play. So, I mean, that's just the way it is, you know, and you know, the Phillies are going to develop guys and it might change in the near future. And I think we're all happy that Gene Segura is here. This is not a complaint, but it's one of the shortcomings with the defense right now that's been noticeable is that they just don't seem to have a lot of dynamic defense. They don't have any dynamic defenders out on the field, and that hurts them sometimes.
Yeah.
Let's read this, and then we'll take a quick break. Felix Sandoval asks, do you have any concerns about Sir Anthony Dominguez? He's been relying on his off-speed pitches a lot more this year instead of his fastball. And then he throws in, also, is Juan Nicasio a cause for concern? He's had a few pretty bad innings. Felix, I can handle that last part for you. Yeah, we're concerned about Juan Nicasio. And yeah, we're ready to fire him into the sun.
So bye-bye.
There's not a lot of number crunching going on there. To Felix's point, Liz, I looked up some of Dominguez's numbers. I think he's looked really good in some outings. I think he's had some bad luck in some of the outings that I've seen from him, where he's got dinged up here and there for a run, this way and that. His fastball velocity is down a little bit this year. It was 98.1 miles per hour on average last season, according to Fangraphs. 97.3 this year, but, you know, 97 mile an hour average fastball is still pretty good. The slider usage has increased a bit. The rest of his peripherals look pretty good, and the slider usage is only up by like 5 percentage points. We're not talking a dramatic usage. He has got a 3.51 FIP to go with a 5.40 ERA. So the ERA is high, but it's about 2 runs higher than the FIP, which tells you the ERA should probably be a little lower, although that FIP number is still not awesome. You know, for a late-inning reliever, you'd like better than 3.51. His strikeout rate is down a little bit this year, but the walk rate is way down, too. Looking at his swing and miss rate, it's pretty much the same as last year. The contact rate, he's getting swings and misses out of the zone. It's hard to pinpoint for me exactly what's going on with Sir Anthony Dominguez. I don't think he's pitching bad. I think he's been a little bit unlucky, but obviously the Phillies don't feel real comfortable with him in the eighth or ninth innings right now, because on Saturday night they brought Friday night they brought him in the sixth inning to relieve Jared Eichhoff, which really surprised me that they brought him in that early.
Yeah, like I'm concerned. I guess I'm torn between being concerned and wanting to just be like, all right, let's see a little bit more. But we're kind of not. How close are the Phillies? Are the Phillies really in that place anymore? Like, when are they at the point where they can say, all right, well, this is definitely not working and we can't really afford to lose more ground given, you know, what the schedule looks like for the rest of the season, you know, what they're going to have to face. And so I'm all for them giving him, you know, some more time to see what's happening, to see, you know, if maybe he can bring things down and show some improvement. But I also wonder when they're just going to have to say no, say no more to that for now.
Yeah. Well, it seems like they're doing that a little bit by having him pitch earlier in games and not in as high leverage situations as they did last year. And so if Sir Anthony can string some scoreless outings together, then maybe they move him back into the seventh inning, eighth inning, ninth inning. But for right now, it looks like they don't trust him to be that guy at the very back of the bullpen. So for anybody who drafted Sir Anthony Dominguez in a fantasy league expecting to get saves, I told you all not to take any Phillies relievers. You're definitely not feeling good about things right now.
I gave that advice to more than a few colleagues at Yahoo who were asking me questions about Phillies players, knowing that I would have some answers.
Yep.
And I said,
we warned you.
I would not take a Phillies reliever at all. Please don't.
Yep, we warned you. Can't say we didn't warn you. Up next, we're going to take a few more mailbag questions from the Patreon listeners, then we'll preview the upcoming opponent for the Phillies next week. That's up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So to wrap up episode 283, we'll finish up with a couple other mailbag questions from the Patreon listeners. Brett Christensen asks, what about Roman Quinn? I've been excited for this guy to be on the roster for a while. This is Brett talking. He's got talents the Phillies could use. My question is he hurting the Phillies by being on the 25 and 40-man roster? Can you be a competitive team and have a guy on your 40-man that you can only use in month-long stretches? I'd love for him to work it out, but can we wait for it? Liz, I think this is a fantastic question because I have actually thought this myself, but just kind of in passing in my mind and never articulated it, and Brett articulated it really well. How long can they have Roman Quinn on their 40-man roster? Obviously, when he's on the DL, he's not on the 25. But how long can you have, I guess as long as you don't have a 40-man roster crunch, you can keep a guy like Roman Quinn on the 40-man. But at this point, he's injured more than he can play. I don't know what the utility is in having Roman Quinn anymore. You can't trust him to stay healthy. You can't know, and it hurts you for planning purposes. When the Phillies came into the season, they didn't go out and sign another backup outfielder because they were relying on Roman Quinn to kind of be the backup center fielder, to be the fourth outfielder on this team. And so far, that hasn't worked out. They've used Nick Williams. They used Aaron Altherr, and Aaron Altherr was DFA'd this week. So pour one out for Aaron Altherr, the Rhineland Rocket. Shame to see him go, but the move makes sense. But, you know, Roman Quinn was supposed to be a big part of this team this year, and he has never been able to stay healthy. I don't know how long the Phillies can afford to keep him aboard.
I mean, they've kept him thus far. I think you know, I'm sure he's running out of time. I don't see it happening this season. And unless they come across someone they like more, I don't see it happening next season. They obviously like him a lot. They obviously like what he brings to the table and what he has to offer. They also
know there's a lot to like.
There's a lot to like. And they obviously know these injuries aren't his fault. I'm remembering an interview, I believe, or an interview in an article that I think Megan Montemurro wrote about him last year that touched on a lot of this stuff. And I encourage everyone to look it up. It was very well done. But it also talked about how the Phillies are handling him and trying to help prevent injuries. I'm disappointed that that hasn't seemed to have worked out lately. I wish I could say what I knew the Phillies were going to do. My hope is that they continue to give him time, but also if they say goodbye, I wouldn't blame them. I've kind of made my peace either way, but I also think if they were going to send him off, I think they would have done it by now.
I guess. I mean, I think you're probably right. You can't depend
on a guy like that. You're right. Yeah. You can't. It's hard and it's frustrating for everybody because it feels like the universe is kind of against him being a productive player.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
And I think all the talent we've seen the talent Quinn has and the dynamic. We talked about dynamic defenders. Roman Quinn's a dynamic defender.
Yeah, he is. You know, I mean, is he hurting the Phillies by, you know, is he, I think phrasing it that way is weird. Are the Phillies being hurt by continuing to keep him on the, you know, the 25 or 40 man? If not, you know, if not the 25, then the 40 man. I mean, maybe they are. But of course, the question is, who is going to replace him?
Right. Like, and
who's
going to
replace
spot
him full time?
Yeah. And, you know, I guess if there's somebody that you need to bring up who's not on the 40-man roster, that's where having Roman Quinn on the 40-man would hurt you. And the Phillies had to DFA Aaron Altherr this week, who has been terrible these last 2 years, and I don't disagree with the decision to DFA Aaron Altherr over Roman Quinn by any stretch of the imagination, but you know the fact that Roman Quinn is on the 40-man means that there wasn't a spot for Altherr, and if there's a relief pitcher or a starting pitcher that they want to bring up from AAA, they're going to have to make a 40-man roster decision, and they have some other guys that they could potentially move on from, and you know, I think Matt Klentak has a stronger idea of what to do with the 40-man roster than we do, but Roman Quinn obviously has talent. He has a ton of talent to be a productive bench outfielder and maybe a starting outfielder if he can ever stay healthy, but it's frustrating that he hasn't been able to stay healthy. He gets back, he plays for 3 weeks, and then he hurts something else.
Yeah.
And it's deflating for him, I'm sure, too. Yeah. I know that he wants to be out there.
Yeah. I mean, I think you kind of put it perfectly. There are guys, there are guys in front of him on the list. You have to sort of look at it. Is his continued, you know, his propensity towards injury, does that bring him to the top of the list ahead of other dudes they could potentially send off into the desert, wherever it is they send them?
Right.
You know, I don't think his injury brings him to the top of that list. I don't think that puts him in front of anybody. I think as long as he continues to have talent and potential, the Phillies will continue to find room for him. Because, you know, unless every single other player they have on the 40-man is 100% worth keeping, his talent's always gonna win out. And I think, and I'm glad for that. It's frustrating to see what's happening, but I'm glad the Phillies continue to see value in what he brings, even while injured.
All right, let's move on. Patrick asks, what do you think about struggling starters being moved to the bullpen and back into the rotation later in the season, or bringing up successful AAA starters to pitch in the bullpen, then maybe in the rotation later in the season? Is it too hard to make that transition midseason, then transition back? I feel like we discussed this a little bit already, Liz.
We did, yes. Thought about this question as we were talking about it. I'm like, oh no, I've stepped on the toes, but you had your question answered, and now it's been talked about twice, so...
There you go. And let's just remind people that Adam Wainwright, Dennis Eckersley, John Smoltz, Brett Myers, Wade Davis, all guys who transitioned from being good starting pitchers to great relief pitchers. And in Brett Myers' case, went back to being a starter after being, but just not mid-season, you know, it was the following season. So yeah, once you rip that Band-Aid off and make a starter or reliever mid-season, there's no doing that again. You got to wait till the next season for a pitcher to build his arm back up. Michael Logan asks, has Michael Franco done enough to solidify his his role in the lineup for this season? How long will he have to keep this up before people stop looking for his replacement?
Forever. It'll be forever. And that's, I was going to talk about this earlier, but there, at no point will Phillies fans ever be satisfied with Mikel Franco. And I think it's just, there's been a hole at third base for years. Third base has never, you know, since what, Mike, who else has been after Mike Schmidt? Like, the Phillies didn't even have a great.
Scott Rolen was supposed to be that guy, but it didn't turn out that way.
And it's just been a carousel. You know, they haven't had anyone steady for a long time, and they haven't had anybody great for ages. And Franco, you know, doesn't reach those heights. Like, during the good years, you know, that last big run, they didn't have a steady third baseman. Pedro Feliz was the third baseman. And, you know, comparing them seems ridiculous. I'm not going to do that. But, like, people aren't ever going to stop looking around, you know, looking behind their shoulder to see who else is there who could be better than Mikel Franco. And it's because Mikel Franco is not like an ultra super stupendous, amazing, great third baseman. And I get wanting more, but I think he's great. I think he's fine. I think, you know, he does have hot and cold spells, but he's looked good this season. He looks locked in.
I agree. He does look locked in. I think it's a great way to phrase that, because one of the problems with Mikel Franco has always been stepping in the hole, looking like he wanted to pull everything, trying to, you know, he'd take a step forward. He'd always had that wide open stance, and then he'd place his front foot basically into the third base dugout and try to swing. This year, it's like he's picking up that foot, putting it down, and hitting the ball where it's pitched, hitting line drives everywhere. I always suspected that if he could ever stop pulling off and trying to hit everything, you know, into Harry Callis's restaurant up in the upper deck in left field, he could be a really good hitter, because he always has hit the ball hard. He's just hit the ball on the ground way too much. His ground ball rate has always been way too high for a guy with absolutely no speed and athletic ability whatsoever running the bases. But he's always hit the ball hard, and he doesn't strike out. He's never been a strikeout guy. And so now I just feel like hitting down at the bottom of the order, Liz, hitting in the eight hole, just seems to have relaxed him. You know, it doesn't seem to me like he's feeling like the weight of the world is on his shoulders. I think Bryce Harper coming here, and Real Muto and Segura and all these other guys who are in the top of the lineup, he could just be down at the bottom of the lineup and do his thing. And he's been tremendously valuable. I do think it's silly, all of the he's the best number eight hitter in baseball kind of stuff, because number eight hitters are garbage for the most part. But it does speak to the length of the Phillies lineup and how well he's done hitting in a difficult spot. Hitting in front of the pitcher spot is usually tricky, because you don't, generally speaking, get as many good pitches to hit. You are traditionally, they pitch around the eight-hole hitter so that they can face the pitcher if, you know, there's nobody on base, you know. But Mikel Franco has made it work, and he's been consistent, and you said it best. He looks locked in. So for me, I'm not looking for anybody else now. If Franco plays like this the rest of the year, I'm not looking for an upgrade next year. I'm not looking for a new third baseman free agent. I'm not looking to make a trade. If Anthony Rendon is still unsigned, I don't know that I'm looking to sign Anthony Rendon to a big deal. I'm very happy with Mikel Franco doing what he's doing.
Exactly. And you could be happy with him because he's surrounded by a lot of good hitters, you know?
Right.
You know, I've just been so happy to watch, like you said, in the box, he looks different. He looks very mindful. You know, he looks like he always knows exactly what he's going to be doing. You know, I don't know why I've said that a couple of times, but it seems like he's really like in the moment. And that can be a problem for hitters, sort of thinking about everything else. He always looks like he's just focusing on hitting right when he's there.
Yeah.
You know, instead of, like you said, moving his foot back and concentrate, you know, trying to put himself into this mind space that he thinks he needs to be in, as opposed to just sort of being relaxed and letting it happen, which I've loved. Yeah. I love Mikel Franco. He is so much fun. He's fun to watch.
He is a fun guy.
And I think he's better at third base than everyone gives him credit for. Like, what the hell is everyone expecting? Come on.
He makes the routine play. He makes, and he's got a good arm there.
Yes.
You know, that's Mikel Franco.
Yes. And Would we like more? Sure. Do we need more? Right now, we don't.
No. No, I agree. I think Philly's pitchers also are happy with the defense they're getting from Franco at third base. So really good on those balls coming in, barehanding balls and throwing to first. That's a particular skill of his yes. at third base. So last Patreon mailbag question. Andrew Seddon asks, are you worried about Harper's OPS this year? It's not awful, but for that contract, would you want more? I know it's early in the season, but still, I thought it might be higher. And Bryce Harper, after Sunday's game, hitting .233 with a .374 on-base percentage and a .467 slugging percentage. So he's got an OPS in the 800s with six home runs, 21 RBIs, a .121 weighted runs created plus. He is striking out nearly 30% of his plate appearances. What's worried me the most about Harper, and I think he'll come out of this. I mean, it's certainly, he went through this last year, and it was a three-month-long funk, and then in the second half snapped out of it. But what he's struggling with right now are fastballs over the plate, you know, high velocity fastballs. He's late. He's not catching up to fastballs. And it's not because he's old or because there's an aging curve here, just for whatever reason. Maybe he's swinging too hard. I don't know what it is. I compared it last week to, I think his swing sometimes when he's trying to do too much. I saw that with him with Washington last year. He's like a crazed 3-year-old trying to hit a pinata full of Tootsie Rolls. You know, he's, I think sometimes he swings a little bit too hard and those 95 plus mile an hour fastballs over the plate that have hit me written all over them. He's just late on them. He's just missing them. And I don't know what the solution is. I'm hoping the fact that John Mailey is the hitting coach and that they've got the driveline people there, that I'm hoping they can figure something out. But I'm not worried about Bryce Harper, but I'm not loving the .233 batting average, but it's been a productive .233 average, if that makes any sense, with a .374 on base. I'd like to see more homers. I'd like to see a little bit more consistency, but I don't know. Where are you on Bryce right now? And he's definitely slumping. There's no doubt about it.
Oh yeah, I mean, but he's still walking a decent amount, which yep. makes me happy. There's at least that, you know, his on base percentage is still pretty high. I'm happy with that. I would like him to do better. I always feel like he wants the big moment too much. You know?
Well, and lately he's missing too many pitches and not delivering in the big moments when they're coming. And that's with the walks, it's great. The walks are great when, you know, especially if he can like lead off an inning, but he has had a lot of situations lately where he's been up with runners on base with a chance to do something and he hasn't been able to come through because he's simply just not making enough contact right now. Today he did. He had a solid RBI single in the Phillies' 5-run inning and it was great to see. It was a nice simple stroke. But a lot recently, that's been Harper's problem.
He'll get there. I think he'll get there. He did it last year. And with so many great hitters around him, once he finally starts to get hot, he'll make a huge difference. You'll see the impact right away. You know, especially if a few other guys can stay hot, you know, and be consistent. It won't be like he's replacing someone else's production entirely.
Right. No, I agree. And once Bryce Harper gets hot, you're going to see the city go Phillies crazy again. I feel like there's been a little bit of a lull in Phillies excitement in Philadelphia right now. Part of it is the 76ers in the playoffs. I think that's sucking a lot of the oxygen out of the room. But also Bryce Harper is slumping a little bit. The electricity hasn't been there. Like you mentioned with the double wave yesterday on Saturday during the game, there's just a little bit of the electricity is gone. And I think when Bryce is slumping, as good as Rhys Hoskins is hitting, with Bryce slumping, a little bit of that electricity is kind of missing with the Phillies at the moment, but they are performing well despite Bryce Harper slumping a little bit, and hopefully it won't take him quite as long as it did last year to get out of the funk that he's in, and that maybe they move him to the leadoff spot like the Nationals did last year for a little bit to try and just give him a different look, get him some different pitches from different points in the game, give him a different mindset, and you know, any number of different things that they can do to kind of get a player out of a slump. All right, Liz, up next for the Phillies, they embark on a road trip to St. Louis and Kansas City. Going to spend a lot of time in the great state of Missouri. You got Vince Velasquez going up against Miles Michaelis in the first game of the series. Michaelis has a 4.73 ERA on the season so far, so not a great season, but Michaelis is an outstanding starting pitcher. He could give the Phillies fits. You have Aaron Nola versus rookie Dakota Hudson, who sounds like a private eye on an NBC sitcom from the early 1990s.
Or a country singer.
or a country singer, one of the two, but you've got Nola versus Hudson, and then Jared Eichhoff versus Jack Flaherty. Flaherty has struggled this year, but that dude has Cy Young caliber stuff. He could very easily twirl a three-hit shutout against the Phillies, but his problem has been giving up home runs. He's given up 8 home runs in 36 and two-thirds innings this year. St. Louis also coming, they just got swept by the Chicago Cubs this weekend, so the Cardinals are reeling a little bit as the Phillies take them on, so you can look at that one of two ways. One, the Cardinals are going to take it out on the Phils, or that the Cardinals are just they are slumping at the moment, and so we will see when the series gets underway in St. Louis. So, Liz, any final thoughts before we wrap up episode number 283?
Yes, just a few things. First, I feel bad that I didn't deliver on my promised unhinged rant about the Wave. The Wave sucks, and I do hate it. Please don't get me wrong.
It was a little hinged.
It's hideous. Yeah. and last night's Wave was inexcusable. And let me also say, in the bottom of the ninth, with one out, with at least one runner on base, a few people started doing an Eagles chant, to which I say, that's too ironic even for me. Because someone tried to say, well, that, you know, they were clearly joking. I'm like, no. An Eagles chant then is not a joke. An Eagles chant then is an offense to God and baseball. Like, let's all get real here. The Wave sucks. Last night's Wave was stupid. The end. Now, my other final thought is something a lot more pleasant. My fiance and I are getting married in August, and we are looking for ways to incorporate baseball into our wedding reception, or even perhaps our wedding ceremony. We're struggling a little bit. If any of you fine listeners have incorporated baseball into your weddings or other celebrations in a special way, I'd love to find out how. If you have any pictures of said craft things, I'm trying to find a way to incorporate Phillies baseball cards into the reception stuff, like table numbers, place cards. We're looking for a way to incorporate baseball into our ceremony. We're trying, like, baseball and love. There really isn't a whole lot out there. But I thought I would crowdsource a little bit and see what all of you thought. So if you have any thoughts, please let me know. You can hit me up on Twitter at Liz Rocher. That's R-O-S-C-H-E-R.
There's any number of Kevin Costner movies out there, Liz, that you could look at to kind of help you in this regard.
Yes, Kevin Costner has a very sexy monologue in Bull Durham that is not suitable for a wedding ceremony, unfortunately.
No, it's not.
It is one of my favorite monologues in all of movies, but unfortunately, I don't think I don't want either me or Sean to say that at our wedding ceremony.
Not going to work as a wedding vow.
No.
No doubt about it. Yeah, you're going to have to think of something else there. Well, kids, that'll do it for episode number 283 of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Liz Rocher once again for joining me on the podcast. And Justin, I forgot to mention at the top of the
Justin
podcast,
doesn't
just
exist
on vacation.
Bye-bye.
Justin exists. He's still the head guy at The Good Fight, but Justin just on vacation, getting a much-needed break. And so he'll be back with us on Sunday night next week, I believe. And
continued success this week. We took a break this week because Justin was on vacation, but we'll be back in full force next week to talk about the 2009 Phillies.
There you go. And so if you haven't listened to Continued Success yet, why the hell not? If you're a subscriber to the Good Fight podcast feed, make sure you do that and give us that 5-star rating and review when you get a chance. And also don't forget to check out all of the great bonus content we have over at the Patreon for Hittin' Season listeners. That's at patreon.com/Hittin' Season. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.